Thank you very much for your welcome. My wife and I have just spent a lovely week in Northern Ireland. We didn't realise the weather was so good here, so looking forward to coming back. And it's very beautiful as well. Well, this evening I want to encourage you to show you that you're specially created, specially made. God is a very caring God and God loves you very much. I don't believe that we've evolved from an ape-like creature. I believe we're specially created, as the Bible explains, and I shall explain that this evening. But I really hope to encourage you. I just have two slides at the beginning to tell you a little bit about my own work, because you often hear a myth in the media that scientists don't believe the Bible, scientists don't believe in special creation. But that is a really bad myth, because I know many scientists who believe in biblical creation and believe the Bible, but sadly that doesn't come across in the media. So I have two slides about my own work. I've had the privilege of working at the forefront of science and technology. I've worked for the European Space Agency and designed parts of space rockets, the Skylark rocket, the Hubble Space Telescope. This is a satellite that will be launched in a few weeks' time. It's a $1 billion satellite, and I designed the main deployment system on this satellite. So I'm getting a little bit nervous. I'm not too nervous, because this is the fourth satellite in a series that's gone up. The first satellite, when that was launched in 2002, I was absolutely terrified. When the spacecraft was on the launch pad, ready to go up, I was physically sick for a couple of weeks before launch. And engineering design is a lot harder than most people think. When you actually design something complicated yourself, you realize design does not happen by chance. And that's why I'm passionate about going around the world telling people that design reveals a designer. That's the design argument. So I've worked on spacecraft. But just one other slide I wanted to show you. I've also been involved in designing the Olympic bikes for the British Olympic cycling team. I helped design their bikes for the Rio Olympics, and I'm now helping to design bikes for the Tokyo Olympics. So this week when I get back, I'll be back in the lab testing for the Tokyo Olympics. That's that large carbon fiber chain wheel. That's the chain wheel I designed for Rio. The chain on there I designed for Rio, and the sprocket and some of the assembly schemes for the Olympic bike, I designed those as well. When Team GB first came to me in 2013, they asked me if I could help design their bikes, and they asked if I would do it. And I said, if they gave me an official Olympic tracksuit, then I would do it. So one came in the post the next day. In fact, a couple came in the post the next day. And I asked them what they wanted me to do for the Olympic bikes, and they said, it's just straightforward. We want the fastest bike in the world. We want to go 50 miles an hour on the flat on a track bike, which is incredible for a bicycle to go 50 miles an hour. Just human-powered on the flat is a very difficult thing. But every day since 2014 January, I've been designing, and I've had a team helping to design those bicycles. When the Rio Olympics came in August 2016, for the second time in my life, I felt absolutely terrified, because I have seen sprinters snap chains. Their muscles are so strong, they can snap a chain. So I was pretty frightened with my own chain on the bike for the Rio Olympics. But thankfully, the chains did not break. On the first race, I was in the Pyrenees in Spain, and I was phoning my wife, asking my wife, please tell me the chain did not break in the, because everything was live on TV with 300 million people watching. And the news came back to me in the very first race that Team GB did. It was a qualification race, but they broke the world record on their first race. So things obviously worked well. And then the next 6 days, they won six gold medals, which was, the way it turned out, was actually a record. And when I got back, there were news headlines around the world asking what had happened to Team GB. But I exhibited the work at the Royal Society in London last year, and I didn't get a gold medal myself or a copy, but I did get a thank you from a government minister, from the Minister for the Treasury. So it is true, some scientists do believe in biblical creation. It's a myth to think that scientists or science disproves the Bible. Everything that I've done in science confirms what I believe in the Bible. If you believe in biblical creation, if you believe in Genesis, you have nothing to feel embarrassed about whatsoever. In fact, you stand shoulder to shoulder with most of the greatest scientists that ever lived. People like Lord Kelvin, James Clerk Maxwell, Michael Faraday, Isaac Newton, Robert Boyle, the greatest scientists believed in the Bible. But now I want to talk specifically about the design of man, the uniqueness of man. I'll just mention very briefly two Bible verses that where God is telling us that man is special. One of the reasons we are special is that we're made in the image of God. We're not made in the image of a monkey, but the image of God. And a complementary verse, a very important verse in Psalm 8, that says we are made a little lower than the angels. And that is very different from a little bit above the beasts. Sadly, today, children in schools are taught that we're just a little above the beasts, just a little bit better than an ape. But the Bible says we're up there, a little lower than the angels. That is a very different view of man. So why is it important? Really, this is crucially important. This is at the heart of the creation evolution debate. When you think of the origin of man, well, there are two worldviews, and it's not science versus religion. It's one worldview versus another worldview. The biblical worldview is that man is special. To give you one example, and I'll explain this as the presentation goes on, according to the biblical worldview, our hands are designed for skill, for playing musical instruments, for doing art, for writing, skillful tasks. And man is accountable. We're accountable before God for the decisions we've made, for the life we've lived. So when you see the ability of man to play musical instruments, to play the piano, that's exactly what you'd expect if God had created man. So this is the biblical worldview. But then in great contrast, you have a very different evolutionary, atheistic worldview. Man is not special. Sadly, that's what children are taught in schools. You are not special. How do you think children are taught today about the origin of their hands? Because I've just said the biblical worldview is that a hand's designed for skill. But what are children taught in schools and students taught in university? They're taught that a hand has evolved to throw a spear and to throw a punch. That's what children are taught, which is not very good just before they go to the playground, to tell them that their hand is designed to form a fist and to punch someone in the face. What a contrast that is, telling someone their hands are designed for skill or their hands are designed to punch someone. But that illustrates the great contrast. This isn't a little unimportant issue. This is a really important issue. And according to the evolutionary worldview, man is not accountable to God. People often say to me, why do scientists ignore evidence for design? Well, it really ultimately comes down to that. They don't like the idea of being accountable to God. So they have these ideas that man had evolved from some ape-like creature. And by the way, that picture, which children are often shown, has absolutely no scientific evidence at all. And there are even quotes from evolutionists who admit there is absolutely no evidence for that picture whatsoever. It's just the figment of someone's imagination. I've done, as well as work on spacecraft and Olympic bikes, I do a lot of bio-inspired design. And as part of that, I study the human body, so I've looked at parts of the human body in the lab, and many of the things I talk about in this presentation is from my own experience studying the design of humans. I've written a couple of books, a book and a big booklet on the design of man, and most of those books describe 10 unique features of human beings, 10 things that make you very special, things that we often take for granted. And it's not just 10 special things, but it's 10 ways in which we are over-designed, which is a great challenge for evolution, because the whole definition of evolution is everything you have is just what you need to survive. You shouldn't have anything which is more than you need to survive. But when you look at human beings, we are over-designed. Our brain is more powerful than it needs to be. Our hands are more skillful than they need to be. And that is a great evidence for a creator. So I'll go through these 10 unique features. And the first one is our unique upright stature, or bipedal stature. So if you look at those two skeletons, an ape is designed to walk on 4 limbs, whereas we're designed to walk on 2 legs. Sometimes you hear in the media, we're just a tiny bit different to chimpanzees, like 5%. Well, I think we're 100% different to chimpanzees. We're 100% different because walking on 2 legs is 100% different to walking on 4 legs. It makes us completely different. And we have all of these specific design features from head to toe make us designed to walk on 2 legs. All the bones in our body are for upright standing. We have balance sensors in our head for upright standing. Everything about us is designed to walk and run upright. And I just focus a tiny bit on our feet. Our feet are a marvel of design. You may not think so when you put your socks on in the morning, but your feet are a wonderful mechanical design and unique in creation, because the human foot is like an arched bridge. It even has a keystone at the top, just like an engineered bridge, completely different to the foot of an ape, which is really like a hand for gripping branches. Because our foot is an arch, it's very easy to stand up. It's easy for me to stand in front of you. I can feel the front of my foot, the back of my foot. So I just put the center of gravity in between those two points. People who are born flat-footed find it difficult to stand because they're having to get their balance. But if you have a healthy arched foot, it's very easy to stand. Apes can't do that. We have a big toe, which gives strength, important for running, and we can stand on our toes. Apes cannot play any sports because they cannot stand on their toes because they don't have an arched foot. Incredibly, our foot can be both stiff and flexible at the same time, which is something engineers find very hard to do that. Just to go one step further on that, we actually, humans, have three-point contact with the ground with our feet. You can see the 3 points on that picture. And what that means is it's easy to stand on one leg as a human, because what I'm doing now, I'm putting the center of gravity of my body through those 3 points on the ground. An ape cannot stand on one leg because it's like trying to do a handstand on one hand. That's a really difficult thing to do because you don't have a defined contact with the ground. So we are so different, the way we stand, the way our feet are designed. So humans have a unique ability to run long distances, vastly more than apes, and a unique agility where we can hold things with our hands as we run. And so humans can do an amazing array of sports. Squash is one of my favorite sports. I don't do ice skating, but I watch ice skating. And you have this unique elegance of humans. Sport is interesting, and an interesting way of observing the uniqueness and the unique elegance of the design of the human body. And there's also evidence of over-design. Just to give you one example, I've actually published a scientific paper on a bio-inspired knee joint that I've produced, and what we observed with the human knee joint and our own, because we copied, was that the knee joint locks just above top dead center, which means I don't need to tense my muscles as I stand in front of you. I just lock my knees. We are designed to stand, to lecture, to teach, to preach. God has put that tiny detail in our knees, not necessary for survival, but a really nice thing, a nice feature to have. So then secondly, we have uniquely skillful hands. The idea that our hands are there to throw spears and to throw punches is such a ridiculous idea. Not just a dangerous thing to teach children, but such a ridiculous thing. Our hands are clearly designed to do really skillful tasks. Our hands can make a perfect pinch grip with each finger and the thumb. We have flexibility in the palm that helps us to do that. I've spoken with hand surgeons and said, is there any dimension or feature in the hand that you would change to make it better? And the answer is no. The hand is a perfect design for skill, for musical instruments, for other things like that. It's possible to make up to 58 different movements with the hand. And our hands can go from straight to a clenched fist. In the case of apes, they can only curve their hands, which is good for gripping branches. They can't even have a flat hand, yet alone do the delicate pinch grips. And we have finer muscles in our hands as well. If you could look under the skin of your hand, this is a picture from Grey's Anatomy. This is the kind of thing you would see. And the dark bits are the muscles. You can see the tendons. These are the tendons here. What Gray's Anatomy does, he dissects the finger differently, each finger. So, for example, the index finger here, notice this spiral wrapping. Why do you think this spiral wrapping? That's what you would see on each of your fingers if you looked under the skin. It's like a craftsman is carefully holding the... Well, it's there to hold the tendon in place. Why is it better if it's a spiral than a circle? If it's a spiral, it doesn't restrict your finger. So the reason the pianist can play so fast with such precision is that these wraps are spiral wrapped and not circular wrapped. These tiny details that God has put in to make our hand work with precision. Notice this tendon splits either side of the bone. Why should it split? Why is there that detail? Well, again, it makes our fingers very subtle, so we can play the violin and the piano. It doesn't help you throw a punch. In fact, it makes it harder to throw a punch. Our hands are designed for skill. This is a robotic hand. I designed that myself with my team, and it's a very humbling thing to try and design something copying what God has designed, because it is so inferior to what God has designed. But when you do try and copy God's designs, you realize how good his designs really are. And humans have unique skills. Knitting and crochet is an amazing skill. I can't do any of that myself, but I'm really impressed with those who can. Because notice, you have to do multiple grips when you're knitting. You're not just holding one thing, you're making multiple grips with each hand. And that's a really hard thing to do that. And then we come to over-design. Our hand is perfectly designed to hold a pen because our middle finger, index finger and thumb come together to form a tripod grip. Your hand could not be better designed to hold a pen. That is exactly what you'd expect if God had designed us. But the atheist has to say, well, this is a coincidence, just a lucky coincidence. Or they have to say there was some survival advantage, like there were cavemen and those who could fill in a cave tax rebate form had better chance of surviving than those who couldn't fill in a cave tax rebate form. But the stories become ridiculous. And then there are so many coincidences you have to believe in design. So the ability of humans to play all of these musical instruments with incredible speed and precision, that reflects the design of the Creator. Then thirdly, because I said we have 10 of these unique features, the third one is unique, fine skin. Our skin is very special. Some atheists call us a naked ape, because they say we're like an ape, but we're naked. And they don't know why we're naked. But our skin is very special. It's what you'd expect if God had designed us. This is a tiny cross-section of human skin, just a few millimeters, and it's a simplified picture. And when you remember that skin repairs itself and maintains itself, it's an incredible design. If you just look, this is a single hair. You have many thousands of hairs on your body. This is a single one. It has its own blood supply. It has its own nerve supply. It has its own muscle, so it can move. Every hair in your body can move. And it has its own reservoir of lubricant, so oil can come out. It's an incredible design. And the sweat glands have this precision design. I have some colleagues, mechanical engineering colleagues, who try to design mechanical skin, perhaps for medical purposes. But when they see this picture, they start fainting because they think there's no way that they could design anything as good as that. And our skin is unique. We have unique touch sensors, so we can enjoy the touch of a petal or work out what we're touching. We have a large number of touch sensors. And what I think is really interesting is that humans have a unique ability to cool down. Firstly, we can change our clothing. There's no excuse for not working hard, because if you get hot, you can adjust your clothing and carry on working hard. Animals can't do that. Many animals find it hard to work hard, because when they get hot, they can't cool down. But also, humans have many sweat glands, a very large number of sweat glands, much more than animals, so we can sweat as well. If you're an animal like a dog, it can take ages to cool down. Sometimes all you can do is stick your tongue out and just wait. And it takes a long time to cool down like that. So humans have unique skin. And I think there's over-design here again. It's hard to explain the sensitivity of human skin. We can enjoy touching flowers, enjoy touching human skin. That's what you'd expect if God had designed us. Because the Bible says God has given richly all things to enjoy, but he's also made us richly that we may enjoy all things. But our fine skin is not what you'd expect if we had evolved from hunter-gatherers. Then the fourth unique feature, this is my favorite. This is my youngest son when he was 5. He's going to help me illustrate this one. Because humans can make unique facial expressions. All of the things I'm talking about, we often take for granted. Facial expressions, we really take for granted. But every day, you may not realize it, but you're reacting to other people's facial expressions. You see someone who looks anxious or very happy, and you react to that. Although you don't register, you've just reacted to a facial expression. Facial expressions can be a very fast way of communicating if there's danger or sudden surprise. Hence the two examples of my 5-year-old son. But our ability to make facial expressions is incredible. On the left is a picture of the muscles in an ape's head. And there are about 26 facial muscles. But this diagram illustrates how different we are to apes, because in the case of a human, again, this is thanks to Gray's anatomy, we have about 50 facial muscles, 24 dedicated to making expressions. Sometimes you think your muscles are just there to move, but that's not true. In your face, you have all of these muscles to make facial expressions. Do you see the detail of these muscles? This is obviously the lips. Notice these tiny little muscles along here. What do you think those tiny muscles are for here? Those tiny muscles are to make different kinds of smile. also helps you play the flute and do a few other things, but mainly for smiling. How does the atheist explain that we could only survive if we could smile with those tiny muscles? But then why aren't there people in the world who can't smile because, well, they could still survive without smiling? How can you say we could only survive if we smile? And there are endless questions like that. Our design is exactly what you'd expect if God had designed us. So here's just a simple smile. We are designed to smile. And evidence of overdesign. Scientists have put people in a room and they've added up how many different facial expressions they can make. How many do you think it is? And not just make, but also recognize. How many facial expressions can we recognize? According to evolution, it would be like 10. Anger, smile, happiness, surprise, 10. Because the whole point of evolution is you only have what you need to survive. Well, the answer is, it is 10,000. Humans can make 10,000 facial expressions and recognize 10,000 facial expressions, which is exactly what you'd expect if God had designed us. Because if you read the Bible, God always gives in abundance. I was speaking this morning on Psalm 65 at Crumlin Evangelical Presbyterian Church, and I gave a Harvest Thanksgiving talk on Psalm 65, which speaks of God's abundant provision. God gives in abundance. So 10,000, that's just what you'd expect if God designed us. But exactly not what you'd expect if we had evolved from apes. I asked my youngest son to illustrate some of the range of facial expressions. So I put him in front of a camera and I said, okay, he was 5 years old, how would you look if I told you I just caught you being naughty? And he said, I would look like this. So he's a very good actor, even at the age of 5. I've just been caught being naughty, he's going to look like that. So I said, okay, how would you look if I told you what your punishment will be? And he said, well, I'll look like this in that case. And I said, well, how would you look if I told you, okay, now I'm letting you off? And he said, okay, I look like this. Now, this is a 5-year-old child, and you see the range of facial expressions. And it's amazing, at the age of 5, he knows how to coordinate those 24 facial expression muscles. It's amazing that God has designed us with a physical design that can express our emotions and our spiritual feelings. That's an incredible thing to God design us that way. Just one other thing about our facial expression. Another thing that makes you unique is the whites of the eyes, the sclerata. Because the animals, dogs, cats, cows, you can hardly see the sclerata. You can hardly see the whites of the eyes. And what that means is I know your direction of gaze. I know if you're looking at the screen or looking at me. And the reason I can see your direction of gaze is because I can see the whites of your eyes. But with animals, you can't do that. So why are humans different? It's yet another thing that really puzzles the atheists. But from a Christian point of view, it's obvious why you can see the whites of the eyes. This tiny detail, which is actually so important. In the case of animals, it makes complete sense. You cannot see the whites of the eyes because predators like lions or birds of prey, they look for the face of their prey. They look for the eyes. So God has protected prey, not just with camouflage colouring, but God has protected prey by not allowing predators to see the direction of gaze, to see their eyes. But what that means is, according to evolution, even humans, you shouldn't see the direction of gaze. That's why humans are very special and confuse the evolutionist. Because surely we should have the same protection as the animals. But for a Christian, this makes complete sense because God knows that in communication, we want to see each other's direction of gaze. If you're a young teenager, a young man, or a young lady, you want to know if that young man's looking at you from the other side of the room. Direction of gaze is very important in communication. So God has given us that ability to see the direction of gaze. And God also knows, we know how to avoid the lion or other predators. So again, Our design is exactly what you'd expect if God had designed us. So we get on to number 5, unique language and speech. In the Queen's English, there are something like 1 million possible words. 1 million words in our language. How many words in an ape's language? 0. That's not 5% different. That is 100% different. We are completely different to ape-like creatures. And like I was saying, with the facial expressions, scientists have put humans in a room and they've counted the number of words they speak, and it's a large number. According to evolution, if we were hunter-gatherers, we wouldn't speak a lot because a good hunter doesn't speak too much. But evolutionists are confused why we speak so much. Why is it that the average man speaks 4,000 words a day? And why is it that the average woman speaks 8,000 words a day? This is a scientific fact, by the way. It's not an opinion, it's a fact. Often when I give these talks, the men look smug, thinking, yeah, I've always suspected that. But you have to remember, this means women are over-designed twice as much as men. So it's not something to be too smug. And our ability to speak is just, from a mechanical point of view, it's a miracle of design. Because as you speak, the shape of your mouth is constantly changing to make different sounds. In particular, humans have an amazing tongue, which is very agile. As you speak, your tongue makes these different positions. So if you're saying an O sound, your tongue squashes up. If you make an E sound, you completely change the shape of your mouth with your tongue. And as you're speaking, this is happening. Your mouth is changing so fast. Your tongue is moving all over the place. You don't think about it because you learn to do that as a very young child. But it's an incredible design. We have these fine vocal folds for making sound. We have a deep throat for resonance. Apes don't have either of those two things. We have this very agile tongue for making different shapes. We have fine lips to release pressure, so making a pa or a ba, you create pressure and then release it very, very, very quickly. Speaking is a really complicated thing. Incredibly hard to make a robot that can speak like a human. And we have many muscles working in our body to change the shape of our inside, to change the shape of the vocal tract. And our brain is also doing amazing processing. It's not just the production of sound, but it's also the hearing of sound, which is very complicated. If you ask people whether there are gaps between words as someone speak, most people will say, of course there are gaps between words when people speak, because I can hear gaps between words. But they're very surprised when you tell them there are normally no gaps between words when people speak. The reason you hear a gap is your brain puts a gap between each word to help you process the language. So even the processing in the brain is an incredible thing. People often say to me, what do you think is the greatest evidence of design, especially with the human body? And I say, singing. Humans can sing with an incredible beauty. And a choir, a Welsh choir, Northern Irish choir, is a very beautiful thing. And it's exactly what you'd expect if God had designed us, because we're designed to sing praises to God. But if we were some, you know, evolved from some hunter-gatherer, ape-like creature, why should we be able to sing with great beauty? Yet again, our design points to special creation, absolutely. Then we have a unique childhood, another thing that makes humans very special. Animals mature very quickly. They have to survive the first winter, or at least by the second winter, but humans are just so different. We have a childhood that goes up to 18 years, so different. It's so that we can learn these complicated things, language and speech. Our brain can develop. From a spiritual point of view, we can be taught by our family and brought up in the protection of the family. And by the way, all of these unique features I'm talking about, if you look in a biology book, it will tell you that these unique features are facts of science. Our unique childhood, standing upright. But obviously, the modern secular books won't tell you the repercussions and the conclusions that I'm telling you about. Sadly, if you read a book on biology, it talks about humans as being weird and strange, and including our unique childhood. Whereas a Christian will say, our unique childhood is a wonderful thing. It's a gift from God. It's a blessing. A modern atheistic biology book will say, we're born premature. It's really strange. We're a weird animal. And it's so sad that modern science puts man down. Instead of celebrating our wonderful design, it finds excuses to call us strange brute beasts. Then seventhly, humans have a unique marriage and reproduction, although we're trying to ruin this bit at the moment in modern society. But animals only form pairings to produce offspring. Humans are different. Humans get married primarily for companionship. There were people who marry even if they can't produce children. Marriage is very special. Only humans are aware of nakedness. Animals aren't embarrassed by being naked. Interestingly, women have fertile periods all through the year, whereas generally animals have particular seasons. So we have birthdays that go all through the year, if you did a survey of the church. And a woman's time of ovulation is hidden with animals. There's some sign, some colour or smell, but with humans, it's completely hidden, which is what you'd expect, again, if God had designed us. And the birth process itself is different. In fact, this particular subject, I think, has the biggest differences between humans and animals. And humans have unique brains, a unique intelligence. And if you read books on science, it will tell you that the human brain is an incredible organ. I'll just tell you a small number of things about the human brain. One interesting thing is the design of the motor cortex. This is the part of the brain that controls muscles, the motor cortex. 25% of the human motor cortex is dedicated to facial muscles, and another 25% is dedicated to the muscles of the hand. That shows that God is giving us the computer hardware and software to make facial expressions, to be skillful with our hands. So God hasn't just given us the physical skill in our hands. He's given us the software and the computer processing power at the same time. So that shows that God wants us to be skillful with our hands and to express our emotions with our face. Another evidence of over-design is an amazing ability of humans to memorize information. One of the competitions around the world is to memorize the number pi, which you can probably remember from your school days studying maths. Pi is, 3.1415926538 that's the number. And it's a really hard number to remember because it goes on for infinity. That's just the first 20 decimal places, but it goes on for infinity. And there's no pattern whatsoever, and it makes it very hard to remember. There are competitions around the world. Normally only men do it, not because they're more intelligent, they're more stupid, because it's a stupid thing to remember pi. But the world record is held by a Japanese man who spent the whole of his life remembering pi up to the age of 65. And he remembered pi to 20,000 decimal places. It takes him a week just to recite it, which is a very silly thing to do, but I'm glad he did it because it illustrates the amazing ability of the human brain. A more serious example is just an example of a girl who, when she was 3 years old, a Dutch girl, had a really serious brain condition, and she had half her brain removed, and it was the half the brain which had her entire speech center, because it was the left side of her brain. And the surgeon said to her parents, your daughter will lose all ability to speak and to understand. But hopefully she'll survive the operation. Well, she did survive the operation, and exactly as the surgeon said, the girl lost all of her ability to speak and to understand. But later, when the girl was 7, the parents brought the girl back to the surgeons, and they said to the surgeon that the girl was now bilingual in 2 languages, Dutch and Turkish. And the surgeons immediately said, no, that's not possible. Not possible. And so then obviously the surgeon spoke to the girl, checked her records, and the surgeons were absolutely astonished. And the lead surgeon said, it was amazing. I told my students to just forget all the neurophysiology they were learning. They realized they had to start from scratch. They didn't understand the wonder, the design of the human brain. So any children here who complains about learning another language and you have a whole brain, you should not complain about do that. You're over-designed and well-designed to do that. Then ninthly, unique beauty. Every animal is beautiful in its own way. At home we have 2 chihuahuas, extremely beautiful. But there is something unique about the human being. You've probably seen this picture of Vitruvian Man drawn by Leonardo da Vinci. But what you may not know is some of the clever geometry in this picture, because the outstretched arms fit in a square. Because if you're an adult, the distance from your fingertip to fingertip is the same as your height. If you're 6 feet tall, it would be 6 feet from fingertip to fingertip. So a human fits in a square, not a rectangle, but a square. And that's very elegant. The legs are half the total height. If you do a star jump, the center is at your navel. That's the center of the circle. There are also golden ratios in the human form as well. But so you have these elegant ratios, smooth skin, delicate hair on the head, delicate facial features. And down through the ages, great scientists have marveled at the elegance of the human body. Most importantly, man has a unique soul. We have a mind with awareness of self, rational thought. Animals like dogs don't have the same self-awareness that we do. My chihuahuas don't wonder if they're the best looked after chihuahuas in Bristol. They're just happy to be in a family, to get food. They don't have that kind of self-awareness. Humans have a unique ability to appreciate beauty, to have emotions. In fact, part of our brain is dedicated to appreciating visual beauty and even musical beauty. Another thing which is just impossible to explain for the atheist. So we are emotional beings. Animals don't stop to look at a sunset or to listen to birdsong. We have powers of choice. Every second we have the power to choose what to think, what to do, what to say. Every day we're making thousands of decisions. Animals follow their instinct, but humans make decisions. And because we make decisions, sometimes we make bad decisions. We upset our neighbor. We decide not to serve God, to serve ourselves. We make decisions that can be selfish or horrible or hurtful. And because of that, we have a conscience. Every human being has a conscience. We might try and suppress it, but we have a conscience because, as the Bible explains, we are sinners before God. And that's why churches like this are really important, and that's why it's good to come to a church like this to hear the gospel message that God sent Jesus into the world to die on the cross, that if we believe in him and trust in his death on the cross, we can be forgiven our sins, and then know God, which is the reason God made us, that we might know him and enjoy him forever and spend forever in eternity with him. I just want to answer, having gone through the 10 unique features, I just want to answer a couple of objections, because people will often say, okay, man is wonderful, I accept what you said, but how about arthritis, disease, and even death? The answer is this, and as we have it in the Bible, when God created the world, it was a perfect world. There was no arthritis. There was no death. There was no disease. That's not how God made things. But Adam and Eve sadly rebelled against God, and we've also all inherited that rebellion. And after Adam and Eve rebelled, God cursed creation, and that's when arthritis and other diseases came in. Arthritis doesn't mean our knee is badly designed, or other joints. Our knee is perfectly designed, but arthritis is something that came in at the fall of Adam and Eve. I just want to mention one other objection today on the news or documentaries or books. You sometimes hear the claim that humans have bad design and that shows that we weren't created. Well, I've been designing for 35 years and I've been studying the human body for nearly as long, and I can tell you from first-hand experience there is no bad design in the human body. And I give you one example, and if you haven't heard this before, you might come across it in the future. Richard Dawkins has said there's a particular nerve in our throat. It's called the laryngeal nerve, the recurrent laryngeal nerve. Richard Dawkins claims this is, for him, an example of bad design. An American claims it's the worst example of design in nature. So if I just explain, this is our larynx, our voice box, and you can see there's two nerves. There's a superior nerve up here, the nerve that gets for you to control your voice box. But notice there's another nerve that loops like this. It loops like that. And Richard Dawkins and other evolutionists and atheists have said, this looping does not make sense. They haven't said why this causes any problem. There's no problem with this. It's simply that Richard Dawkins thinks this is a ridiculous detour. Well, the answer to this, in a nutshell, but I'll show it more clearly on the next slide, is the best wire routes, because basically your nerve is a kind of wire, the best routes have loops. How do I know? Well, I've been teaching it for 30 years at Bristol University, and I've been practicing it because I've designed wiring systems for spacecraft. Unlike Richard Dawkins, who hasn't designed anything. Because he hasn't designed anything, he doesn't understand how wiring is done. In fact, if he was on my first year design class, he would actually fail reading the books that he writes. So Richard Dawkins doesn't understand that. Why do wires have loops? On the Envisat, the first satellite I designed, I did about 10 kilometers of wiring on that spacecraft. And this is an example of some of the wiring I did. This is wires that come from the solar array of the spacecraft. And notice I have two loops. There's a double loop here. So when I do wiring on a spacecraft, I often have loops, just like the loop in the laryngeal nerve. Why do I do that? Firstly, for intermediate connections, you might just make out a blue wire here. So one reason I did this big loop was so that I could pull out a wire to a temperature sensor and another place. So intermediate connections. Secondly, I did it for redundancy. I have one loop on that side, one loop on this side. If one breaks, the other will work. That's important for a spacecraft. By having a loop, it makes more flexibility for the hinge. It doesn't tighten up, and I wouldn't want this to seize on orbit, so having a loop helps. And there are also assembly constraints. I have to design the loop so someone can actually make the loop on a spacecraft. Now, when I look at the human recurrent laryngeal nerve, exactly what I did on a spacecraft, all those things I see on the human recurrent laryngeal nerve. These are intermediate connections, one to the trachea, one to the esophagus. So the wire doesn't just go to the larynx, it does other things, just like my spacecraft. This gives redundancy. There are examples of soldiers who've been shot in the throat. They can still speak because they have a wire, one going from the top and one coming from the bottom. So it's a brilliant redundant design. It also allows motion by not putting the wires in one place, and there are also assembly constraints. So because I've been doing this for for 30 years, I can see that the recurrent laryngeal nerve is a brilliant design. It's not just that it's not a bad design, it's a brilliant design. But sadly, people are listening to Richard Dawkins, who's never designed anything, never been on a design course, doesn't understand the first thing about any kind of wiring system. And without thinking, he says, that's a ridiculous detour. And then millions of people read him and listen to him and believe him. And he's misleading people very badly. And his books are full of misleading information, things that are just incorrect about design in the natural world. And there are not many academics who actually think he speaks much sense, but for some reason the media keep going back to Richard Dawkins for opinions and teaching. So there are two worldviews of man's importance. Getting back to this really important point, two ways of looking at man. One is that man is special, that you are special in the sight of God. And God cares for you so much. He gave you all those details in your design, all those senses in your body. But what are students taught today? If you go to university, what are you taught? Well, I'm now going to show you something from an Oxford professor. We are just a bit of slime on a planet. That's what students are taught today, and we wonder why young people suffer from depression. Peter Atkins is a professor at Oxford University. I think he's retired now. But that's the kind of thing people are taught in universities. In my university, I've been at Bristol University the last 21 years. When I first went there, I told people that they were very special, made little below the angels, because I thought if those people can tell students that, I'll tell them something else. But interestingly, in the last 10 years, I've been threatened with the sack. I am not allowed to mention any of these things in my lectures. It's the same with Christian unions. The atheist can push their atheism, but Christians are not allowed to say a word. But when I do speak in schools, get invited to schools, and when I do speak in university, I can say it if I'm invited by someone else. I just can't say things in my own lectures. I get an amazing response. If I go to a state school, non-Christian children will say they are thrilled to hear another side. Even if they don't agree, they really want to hear the other side. And children, as students, are saying, why are they not allowed to even hear the other side? Why do they have to be only allowed to be told one side? And it's a very sad society that we've got to, that children are not only being brainwashed, but told they cannot hear anything else. There's a real spiritual battle going on. One of the wonderful things about seeing that we are fearfully and wonderfully made by God, is that you can then understand the purpose of our design. We are made upright. Why? So that we can have dominion over the animals, just like it says in Genesis. God said, you will have dominion over all the animals. When God made apes, he deliberately made them to walk on all fours. God didn't want another animal to stand up to humans. He made us to stand up. There are 4,000 types of mammal in the world. 3,999 walk on four limbs. One stands upright. That's humans. Of course God did that to help us to have dominion over the creatures. We have skill in our hands to subdue the earth, intelligence to understand God's word, and we are designed, above all, to have fellowship with the Creator. Life is not fulfilling until we have fellowship with the Creator. So man is physically unique from head to toe. We are different. The missing link is still missing as much as it was 150 years ago. And we are over-designed from head to toe. We are much more than designed for survival. We are designed to do great things, skillful things, things to do with study. And our design shows that God cares so deeply for us. And I hope that's encouraging. If you're interested to know more, I've written a lot of books, mostly through Day One publications, but by some other places. My very latest book isn't even on that list. The very latest book I wrote is called Wonders of Creation. That was published just a few months ago. And outside there's a book table. You're welcome to look. There's also a few DVDs as well. So you're welcome to look at that. But I really hope that you're encouraged that the evidence is overwhelming that we were specially created. And the evidence is overwhelming that God cares for you. Thank you.